So we are beginning Taher Libeinu part 5. And we have a little bit of an issue. In the last 3 sessions that we had, we spoke about how a person is supposed to approach the topic of sin before they sin. And the first one of those 3, we discussed how a person should totally avoid the situation of getting into being tempted by an avera. And if someone does that, then they're considered a tzaddik. And the opposite if not. Then we described that what happens if a person is already in the temptation. And we had the last 2 sessions on that. And we gave practical tools on how to handle when a person is being tempted. Pushing it away temporarily, clearly defining it as evil, pushing away temporarily, recognizing that you have the wherewithal to hold strong. And then last time we spoke about the idea of having an anchor. Spoke of different types of anchors, how to hold strong. And then a person is a tzaddik, and we brought the example of Yosef at tzaddik, as someone who was in the middle of a great sense of temptation, and he held strong nonetheless. If we would pause the series there, then it would be a bit problematic. Very problematic. Because then any person who ever has sinned in the past would say, okay, very good, you're a tzaddik if you avoid the situation. And very good, you're a tzaddik if you were in the situation, but you were able to hold out. But Rabbi, it just happens to be that I failed in the past. And therefore, I don't make it to the category of being a tzaddik. And therefore, all hope is lost for me. Because it's all very good if you're telling me not to get into it to begin with, but now that I've already done it, or now that I am currently doing it, then what am I supposed to do now? So then I'm not a tzaddik. And that very mindset is what is going to open the door to further sin. We say in Maariv, Haser Satan milfaneinu u'me'achareinu. Haser Satan milfaneinu, we can understand. Right? He's pushing us to go and do sin. The Satan is the Yetzer Hara. Satan milfaneinu is very clear what that's referring to. It's the Yetzer Hara pushing us to go and do something wrong. But what's Haser Satan mi'achareinu? If we're already finished, then what Satan is there after we finished? What Yetzer Hara is there after we're done? But the truth is that the Yetzer Hara, getting you to sin, is not his main objective. Lowering your self-esteem, where a person will then define himself as a Rasha, which will then totally release the bonds of Hashem, that is his objective. Let's just give a mashal to explain that idea. I'll give a made-up mashal, then I'll give a bit of a more relevant mashal, and then as we go through, we'll give the most relevant mashal. Well, that's what we're describing. Imagine you had a safe, which in that safe was secured a lot of gold and silver, maybe the crown jewels. And there's a guard, a security guard, who was given the objective of guarding the safe that no one would come and break free. And there are a band of thieves who they want to get in and steal all that money, all that gold. So they say, well, what are we going to do? And they say, well, there's no point in us trying to distract the guard, because even if we do, it's still going to be the safe is locked. And we won't be able to get anything from the safe. So what we need to do is, we need to get the guard to give us the code. And they go, yeah, that's ridiculous. The guard's never going to give you the code. The whole purpose of him being there is to protect the safe. You think he's going to tell you the code? So they say, yes. How are you going to do that if he's no longer the guard? If he's the guard, then he won't give you the code. But if he's no longer the guard, then... yeah, but how can you make him no longer the guard? He's the guard. They go, no, he's only the God because he believes himself to be the God. But if we can take away his belief that he's the God, if we can take away that he sees himself as the God, then he no longer has the need to hold on to the code anymore. He says, brilliant, but what kind of psychological trick is this that you're going to do to make someone believe that he's not the God when he is the God? How are you going to do that? So they say, very simple. Once he gives in to the belief of himself as a God, in a small degree, the door's open. Then we're going to work on that and push that and pressure that until he recognizes he's no longer the God, and he'll give us the code. They say, how are you going to do that? So this is the trick. One of the rules is that he's not allowed to even say his name. That's the rule. Don't even get into discussions with anyone. Don't do anything. That's the rule. So the God is standing there firmly and securely, and they say to him, Shalom Aleichem, what's your name? And he says, sorry, I'm responsible for watching the crown jewels. I'm not allowed to say my name even. They go, oh, really? Well, we're friends. What are you saying? Like, well, you know, I think we're from the same community. Aren't you Moshe from, I don't want to offend anyone here, but you know, some place where everyone feels they're from. Aren't you Moshe from the... And he goes, wait, you know me? He goes, sure, yeah, we used to do this, that together. That together. Something very general that you can remember something fun and good together. Yeah, sure, we're friends. And then this, it's like, not sure. The guard is kind of losing his security over here. And then the guy says, I'm going to have some bizli now. Do you want to join me? He says, no, I'm not really supposed to. He said, come on, my friend, do you want to join me? What was your name? He says, Moshe. Oh, Moshe, fine. Do you want some Moshe? He says, yeah. I wasn't supposed to say my name is Moshe. Okay, never mind. No, thank you. I don't want the bizli. So then, suddenly, there's a whole turnaround. Wait, you said your name is Moshe? Are you allowed to say that? Didn't you say that you're not allowed to say what your name is? So he says, yes, but what kind of a security guard are you anyway? You're watching the crown jewels and you just like say your name because I took out some bizli? That's where you're holding? He goes, no, I mean, like, you are not worthy of being a security guard. These are the crown, do you know what the crown jewels are? Do you know how great the crown jewels are? And someone like you doesn't even have the self-control to hold back from saying his name. You don't deserve to be the... And they push and push and push, lowering his self-esteem from a place that he opened. He opened it. Eventually says, you know, you're right. I'm not worthy of being the crown jewels, of being the guardian. They go, you're not. We should get someone else to be in charge of the crown jewels. He says, I'm not doing this job very well at all. You're not doing the job well. You're not doing your job. You can't even keep the code. He goes, yeah, I probably couldn't even keep the code. They go, go on, let's see. What's the code? And he says, 57342. They go, yeah, you see, you can't even keep the code. You're worthless. Thank you. Push him to the side. 57352. Open, take the crown jewels, gone. Now, their objective was never, ever, ever, ever to find out what his name was. That was never the point. They didn't care about his name. They cared about lowering his self-esteem to the point where he no longer saw himself as someone of value, as someone who has self-control. The whole purpose of the Yetzer is not to get you to sin. Because if he gets you to sin, then you'll sin once, but then you still are a person. You still have self-control. So you'll sin once and you'll come back. That's not his objective. That's small change for the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara, his real game is to get you to slip up once, and then all the attack goes on the self-image. You're worthless, you're a failure, you are not able to have self-control, no one's going to like you anymore, you won't be able to ever do Avodas Hashem. If this is who you are, there's no chance for you, there's no hope for you, forget it, it's over. Then the person has no stability. He has no control. He's lost any sense of who he is. At that moment, the Yetzer Hara has him. Has him. He toys with him. He offers him tiny things and the person does it. Go on, let's see, what's the code? Just says the code. Because now at that point, he doesn't have a sense of having control over himself. So that's an example which is a made-up mashal. I think you can see very clearly how it works. An example which is a little closer to home is with food. Sometimes a person, let's say there's a cake which is being kept for something, and like for Shabbos, let's say, and a person says, I'm not going to have any of this cake. And in a moment of weakness, then a person just says, okay, just one slice. And they have one slice of cake. 10 minutes later, the whole cake is finished. But what happened there? How did the whole cake get finished? Because when they say, I'm not having the cake, then they have a sense of self. I'm not having the cake. I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to touch it. Once one piece is taken, then their sense of self is gone. I'm a person who doesn't follow rules. I'm a person who I say I won't take cake, but I'll take cake. So then why don't you have another piece? You don't have any sense of self anymore anyway. So just keep going and keep going. And then the whole cake's finished. Because what? Am I going to feel guilty? I anyway feel guilty. So what do I stand to lose? So the Yetzer Hara's goal is not to get you to have that first piece because that's his objective. His goal is to get you to have that first piece just so that he can start pressing on the wound, pushing you down, making you feel worthless. And then he has you. And then the whole door's open. He can do whatever he wants. In the area of Gili Arayas, in the area of Shichvat Zera Levatala, in the areas of looking at things that are inappropriate, there's an initial sense of I can't believe that was me. I can't believe I did that. There's a feeling of the magnitude of how terrible this was. And then with that, there's this choking feeling of, I can't believe I did that. There's no way I can stop it now. Maybe I can try and pause it. Maybe I can try and break it down. But once the Yetzer Hara has got you on that first point, you feel, I may as well just give up. There's a sense of panic of like, I can't take control of myself anymore, I may give up. Look at the first source. What Chazal's instruction was for someone like this. Mishnah Pirkei Avos Perek Beis. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ve'al Tehi Rasha Bifnei Atzmecha. You shouldn't be a Rasha in your own eyes. Just Mefurash. You shouldn't be a Rasha in your own eyes. What is the problem of a person being a Rasha in their own eyes? What's wrong with that? So Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rambam both say. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Shelo Yeh Rasha Bifnei Atzmo. A person shouldn't see himself as being wicked. She'eni Yachol Lachzor B'Tshuva. Meaning that when he sees himself as wicked, then he'll say, there's no hope for me, I can't do tshuva. Why shouldn't he do that? She'nimtza Zeh Mityayesh Libo Min HaTshuva. Because then he gives up hope of ever being able to return. Ve'im Bata Liyado Avera. And then if a sin comes his way, Hutra Lo. He just does it. It's open to him now. He's anyway a Rasha. So a Rasha does sins. So why shouldn't he do the next sin as well? Because he says, what, this next tiny thing is nothing compared to what, you know what I've done in the past? This is small change. He says, his Yetzer Hara says to him. So once he's defining himself as a Rasha, there's no boundary, there's no breaks. There's no stoppage. Because where's he going to stop? Why should he stop? That's anyway who he is. And also the Rambam says that on the same Mishnah. Once a person sees himself as lacking and less, he won't see what he's doing as problematic. He'll say, so what if I do that Vera? I'm anyway, that's the level I'm at. Once the Yetzer Hara has got him to feel that he's worthless, which was the Yetzer Hara's main objective, then he has no hope. Another mashal for the same thing, this is a true story. There was a jewelry shop. And there was someone manning the jewelry shop. They were selling, the seller. And someone walks in and says, can I see that item? So they say, sure. And take it out, show it to them. And they say, thank you. And run out the shop. The seller says, what is that? Starts running after them. Starts running. Right, the guy keeps close enough that the seller feels he's like still able to catch him, but keeps going. Eventually he says, okay, forget it. He throws it back to him. The seller says, oh, thank God I ran after him. Otherwise I would have let this go to waste. I would have lost it. Comes back to the shop, which he'd left empty for about 5 minutes when he was running away. Nothing left in the shop. The goal was never to steal the first piece of jewelry. That was never the goal. The goal was to leave the shop unmanned for 5 minutes. So that a whole team of thieves walk in and take everything else. I don't mind giving you back that first piece of jewelry, fine. But you're going to go back, there's going to be nothing there. The Yetzer Hara's goal is not to get you to sin that first time. That's not his objective. It's to get you to come back and everything's gone. Feel empty. Feel you don't have any security anymore. And then, the person will define himself as a Rasha. Once a person defines himself as a Rasha, we could see this idea from Adam HaRishon as well. The first sin that took place. Why did Hashem call out to him and say to him, where are you? Why didn't Hashem just punish him? He did something wrong. Punish him. It seems like Adam's not worthy of punishment yet at this point. And there's a little bit of hope here. Adam HaRishon starts like accepting it. He says, I heard your voice and I was scared because I was without clothing. So I hid. Meaning hiding is not so great what you're hiding from Hashem. But the fact that he's coming into a discussion is already a good sign. Adam HaRishon is already like willing to explain. So Hashem goes with him on that. Hashem says, okay, I'm not punishing you. You didn't do anything wrong yet that's terrible that we can't come back from. There's still hope for tshuva. Let's see. Let's see if you can apologize. Meaning, I don't think it's you. Someone else probably told you that. Meaning, it's something external to you. I don't think that it's you who did anything wrong here. Did you eat from the tree? Did you do something external wrong which you can apologize for and then it's all finished? Just say yes. You admit, you let go and you're finished. The whole thing's over. You can stay in Gan Eden. For Yomer Adam, Whoa! Adam Rishon is not willing to take responsibility for his action. Until this point, you don't see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is even necessarily going to punish him. One, the moment that Adam Rishon says, Haisha Shernatata, you gave me to her to me. It's your fault, Hashem. It's not my responsibility, says Rashi. Ashernatati Madi, Kan Kafar Batova. Here he denied the good. Here he denied the good. And maybe Al Derech Drush, you could say the following. As long as Adam Rishon was willing to see himself as good, he had a hope, he had a chance. Once he starts saying, don't blame me, it's not me, and he denies the good that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving him, the good that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees in him, and he has to make excuses for himself, then essentially what he's doing is he's still saying, I'm bad and I don't want to accept it. Someone else. Put the blame on someone else. That's where everything goes wrong. The moment he doesn't accept that he did something wrong, the problem isn't the fact that he sinned. The problem is the way that he dealt with the fact that he sinned. I hear that clearly. The problem is not that someone sins. The problem is the way that you deal with the fact that you sin. Sinning in and of itself is not necessarily a problem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed the world with tshuva. He designed the world in a way that it can't even be there'll be a person who won't sin. Except for four individuals in the whole history of mankind. The design of the world is made in such a way that it's normal that man sins. That's part of our creation. Hashem made tshuva before He made the world. It was one of the 10 things that Hashem made before the world. Meaning, He designed the world in a way with a safety net that of course there will be sin, but you don't have to worry. There's a way out. You can do tshuva. There's no problem, carefully with what I'm saying now, but there's no problem with the sinning. That's not the issue. The problem is that when a person defines himself as a rasha after sinning, then he gives up on his connection with Hashem. Because the real question here is, do you feel that Hashem loves you? Do you feel that you have a connection with Hashem? And you have who to return to. If you feel you have who to return to, then you have the anchor that we spoke about last week. You're still good. I am still pure. I am still good. I did something wrong, which I can explain because that day was a tension-filled day for me. That day someone annoyed me. That day I went through something difficult. I went to sleep late. There's some reason why today that it happened, but it's not me. There's a specific reason why on that day it happened, but my essence is still good. My essence is still pure. Adam HaRishon had the opportunity to say, I sinned. I'm sorry. And everything would have carried on like normal. The moment that he said, it's not me, blame, he's not accepting it. It's the issue with how he's dealing with it. He's disconnecting himself from Hashem. You, Hashem, gave it to me. Disconnect from Hashem. Blaming Hashem. That's the issue. Because the issue isn't how many mitzvahs and how many averes you've done. The issue is, where are you in your relationship with Hashem? If you're in a place in your relationship with Hashem which is healthy, you could do a lot of things wrong in theory, but you keep coming back. Hashem loves you. He's infinitely grateful. How do we say in the Shmoneh Esrei every day? Marbeh lisloach. He doesn't get fed up of forgiving. Marbeh lisloach. He's willing to forgive again and again and again. Marbeh lisloach. Marbeh lisloach. From Hashem's point of view, He's infinite. You could sin as much as you want, He'll keep forgiving. He's infinite. But if you see yourself as disconnected from Him because of the sin, then you're cutting yourself off. And the same story happened the next generation. Vayomer Hashem el Kain, Ehevel Achicha. Hashem doesn't go and accuse Kain initially. He just says to him, where's your brother? Why did Hashem do that? Hashem was saying to him, Likanesim obedivir nachat. Hashem was coming to him with pleasant words. Ulay Yashuv. Maybe he'll return. Vayomar, Ani Eraktiv, Vachatati Lacha. And what would happen if you've done that? That would have fixed anything? Hevel's still dead. Yes, that would have fixed everything. Because it's all about the relationship with Hashem. It's all about you saying, I did something wrong, that's not my essence. I'm still good. I'm sorry. Sorry to him. I'm sorry to you. Let's continue. If you have the mindset of, I did something wrong, but it's technical. Meaning, I feel regret for it. And I will do a full tshuva for it. But that doesn't define me. Then you can continue pure. You can continue being good. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was looking for. He didn't punish Cain. He asked him a question. How you doing? Where's your brother? How's everything going? What did he answer? Lo yodati, Hashomer achi anochi. He's removing the blame. Hashem, what do you want from me? Am I supposed to watch him? Is it my responsibility? That's where the sin takes place. The punishment didn't come after he killed. The punishment came after he wasn't dealing with his sin in a healthy way. So our objective is holding on to a self-identity of being a tzaddik, even after sinning. When a person sins, let's give another mashal, I'll come to you in a second. When a person sins, Let's take an example of a small boy in a house, 10-year-old boy, who goes and breaks something in the house. And he runs off to his room and he's like upset. And his mother comes to him and his mother says to him, "How are you doing? Is everything okay?" And he's so concerned about what the reaction of his mother is going to be that he just doesn't want to face it. So he just like sulks in his room. Now his mother, from her perspective, she's just saying, "It wasn't your fault. You didn't do it intentionally. Just say you're sorry. We'll move on." And if he would just pick up his head then and say, "Mom, I wasn't being careful in the house. I was playing with the ball. I'm sorry. It broke the vase. I'm sorry." The mother would be happy. She would say, "It's fine. I know you didn't mean to do it. Be more careful next time. Only play outside. Give him a hug. And they'll carry on." But the son continues sulking. And the mother's got her arm around him and saying, "It's okay. What's wrong? Tell me, tell me." But he's so scared of bruising his self-identity. Of saying like, "I have to admit that I did something wrong. And that means I'm not perfect. And that means..." He'd rather stay sulking. And he'd rather not apologize and stay in that bad way. So the mother wants the relationship. And the mother just wants him to turn up and say, "I'm sorry," and finished. Modevo zev yurucham. Move on. Let's move on. We can have peace. We can have love. But the child remains in his like, "I'm worthless. I didn't do anything good." Now the next time, the son probably won't even be as careful with playing with a ball in the house. Because he never apologized. So he never closed that door. So he still feels worthless in respect to being careful. He then gives himself a label of someone who's just not careful in the house. And then of course he'll play with the ball again. Let's look at what happened if he would have accepted his mother's offer. He would have turned to his mother and said, "Mom, I'm sorry I wasn't being careful." His mom would say, "I love you, it's fine. Just be more careful next time." Next time he would say, "I'm someone who's careful. I will be more careful next time. It'll be better next time." But if he sulks and he says, "I'm worthless, I'm not careful," and he doesn't apologize to his mother, then he remains with a self-image of being someone who breaks things. And then that leaves the door wide open to go and break things again in the future. That was what Adam HaRishon did. And then there's no point of continuing. Am I going to be an Eved Hashem? I'm already disconnected from Hashem. Who would want to have anything to do with me? If they would know what I do in my inner world, they would see that I'm a faker. They would see that I'm not worth anything. They would see that I don't have inner strength. I don't have value. That leads him, that hopelessness leads him to block his ears. The blocking of his ears makes him feel I've crossed a red line that I can never go back from. And that in and of himself holds him going back. You had a question?
So how does it differ how do we differ by saying accept responsibility that I've seen, but it was for some external reason, some technical reason, to Odom saying maybe he hasn't accepted it so much, but he's also trying to say it's a technical reason, it wasn't me, it was Chava. So is that...
There's a difference between a person saying, "I accept responsibility. I did it. It was something which I don't define as myself. It was external to me. I regret doing that." The act of regret is already moving oneself away from it. And then they're clean. As opposed to an act of saying, "Don't blame me. It wasn't me. It was someone else." They're essentially saying, "It remains by me in the inner world." They're telling someone else, "Look at him. Look at her. It's not me. It's not about me. Ignore me." But they're saying, "Because I know I have an issue. And because I know I have an issue, I'm trying to distract you. And say, why are you blaming me? He did it too." Now that very act is, "I know I have it. Please don't pay attention to that. If it can distract you, look at someone else." So when a person did something wrong and they blame someone else, they're essentially saying, it's imbued in me so deeply, there's no way of fixing it. So please ignore the fact that it's me. Overlook that and look at the other person. But when a person says, "I recognize that I did it, but I don't identify with it. I did it because of..." And they find some reason. "I did it because I hadn't learned a particular sefer, which I didn't realize the importance of it. I did it because on that particular day I was feeling extremely tired, was annoyed from someone else who did something else. I did it on that day because I happened to be weak in some other area that I did, and therefore I felt bad about it, and then I just wanted to kind of make up for myself, and I just fell. There's some reason why I did it today, but I am still good. I am still good." Let's say a person's addicted to something. Alcohol, drugs, whatever it is. If they see themselves as working on the issue, if they see themselves as healing, "I'm someone who's in the process of healing," and then they fail once, they have two choices now. Choice number one is, "I'm not healing." And what will that open the door to? "Well, I know I'm not healing. Drink, 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 drink." Or they could say, "I'm still healing. Here I fell because my kid really annoyed me today. And I have like a limit of how much I can handle. That I haven't reached yet. But I'm healing. I'm healing, but I have a limit. Now I know what to work on next." Now I know that I'm healing until a situation where my kids annoy me, that I can handle. My next step in working on the healing is how to overcome drinking when my kids annoy me. That was, I'm actually glad that happened, that I drank that one time. Because now I know what my next step is in healing. I got clarity now. I can take the next step. So the healing, the falling is not the problem. How you view the falling is the issue. If you view the falling as, I'm lost, let go of the anchor, swept away with the river, then that choice is what makes you fall. And fall much deeper than you would. And that's the goal of the Yetzer Hara. That's the goal of the initial thief who takes it. That's the goal of the guy trying to get the security guard to say his name. That's the goal of the first piece of the cake. That's not the point. Just let go of your security. That's the point. The moment you let go, you have no... But if a person says, if I fall, then it's a lesson for me of the next step I need to take. I'm someone working on myself. I'm someone healing. I'm someone growing. I'm an Eved Hashem. An Eved Hashem is not someone who doesn't fail. That's not the definition of Eved Hashem. An Eved Hashem is always looking, what's my next step in Avodat Hashem? How does he know what his next step in Avodat Hashem is? When he fails once, he tries to identify why it happened now. He says, yeah, well, I know I failed now because of, he identifies something. He says, okay, so that's a weak point for me. Now I know it. Thank you that I know it. Now I have no what to work on. He sees himself, his self-identity is still, I'm working on myself. Mashallah Mahadavadome. You bring a car which is not working properly to a car mechanic. And they can't find what's wrong with it. That's a problem. There's nothing wrong with it. But there is something wrong with it because it's not working. So, okay, so what's wrong? No, nothing wrong. So that's good. No, it's not good. It's still not working. Okay, fine. They look and look and look and look and look and they find eventually, the belt snapped. The belt of the engine snapped. Baruch Hashem, we found what's wrong. What do you mean the belt snapped? You know how much that costs? I'm going to have to pay hundreds of shekels now. Yes, but you could pay hundreds of shekels and the car will work and you can drive. It's a good sign. It's tremendous to find an area that you failed. Identify what it is. Then start working on it. And then you can move on. So one should not look to fail. But if one does fail, they view it as a positive thing. Positive in the sense of, now I can continue my mission of growing. Now I can take my next step. This idea that we're describing now is beautifully expressed by the Sforno. Let's read it together. On the next page, source Nun Vav. V'elkain v'al minchato lo sha. V'yichar l'kain me'od v'yiplu panav. Hashem didn't turn to Kain's offering. He was very upset. V'yomer Hashem al Kain, lama chara lacha? Why are you so upset? V'lama naflu panecha? Pause there for a second. Let's go down to the Sforno on this, the first pasuk. Lama naflu panecha? Listen to these words well. These words are an anchor. These words are a lifeboat to save a person from drowning when they just fell and they recognize that's going to be the opening to fall much more. The words of the Sforno. Lama naflu panecha? Ki kesheyesh lekilkul eze takana? When you did something wrong, but there's a way of fixing it, you view it as something that can be fixed and there's a way of fixing it, ein ra'ui litzta'er al ma sha'avar. There's no purpose. It's not appropriate to regret what happened. It's not going to serve any function. In fact, if you learned Rabbeinu Yonah and you learned the Rambam, it's actually going to harm you a lot more than it's going to help you to be mitzta'er. Aval ra'ui lishtadel la'sig tikun la'atid. Judaism is not about getting stuck in the past. Getting stuck in the past is going to make you fall back to the negativity. Judaism is about, I recognize that I did something wrong. There's a way of fixing it. Let me look forward. How can I now work on that? I'm the car mechanic. I discovered the issue. I'm rejoicing. Now I can move forward. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, back in the pasuk above, continues. This is the Hashem's direction of how a person should view themselves after failing. Hashem's. Haloim teitiv se'it. Ve'im lo teitiv lefetach hatat rovetz. Mefurash in the pasuk. What does the Sforno say on that? Haloim teitiv atzmacha. We've just shown you two paths. You can either get stuck in the negativity. I did wrong, I'm terrible, I'm worthless, hopeless, depression, despair. Need a way to feel good about myself. find pleasure in the physical world, sin again. Oh, more despair. I sinned again. Hopelessness. What's going to be of me? I need something to hold on to. Temptation for something physical, which will give me immediate pleasure. Fall again. I fell again. This is terrible. I sinned. Despair. Hopelessness. What am I going to do now? I need something. I need some lifeline, please. Something. Physical temptation comes in. Fail again and again and again and again. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, why are you failing again and again? Halo im teitiv atzmacha. If you do good, v'tishtadel liot gam ata l'ratzon, I don't care that you do sin, says Hashem. I'm not talking about that. Let's not even discuss that. Hashem doesn't even get into that. Hashem doesn't say to him, no, you didn't bring a good quality korban. He doesn't say anything about that. He's just giving him instruction for the future. If you want to do good from now on, seit, you'll go up. Rum ma'ala, v'titnaseh, rovetz lefanecho, mochan li'elecha, great high levels are waiting before you. Dafka, the fact that you fell now, gives you a springboard that you can now reach a much higher level because you know the next place to grow. It's a good thing. Recognize it as a point of growth. But Hashem wants him. V'imlotetiv. But if you failed once and you don't take it as a message of how to grow the next stage, then you're not back to neutral. Lefetach hatat rovetz. Then the sin is waiting, crouching at that opening. Gam kein achatat muchan lefanecha. The sin is now waiting for you. Those other thieves are waiting on the other side of the door of that jewelry shop. They're waiting. That extra bit of cake is waiting. The security guard, his guards are down now because he failed once by saying his name, and they're pushing. And they're going to press on the wound of how you're a worthless security guard. Ki tosif al chatatecha pesha. Shekach darko shel yetzahara. Ve'alecha deshukato. Ki tifne alav lemalot avotav. The moment you don't decide you're working on it, you're going to feel worthless. And once you feel worthless, what are you going to do? You're going to look for some lifeline. So where are you going to go to for a lifeline? You don't feel yourself, you're a tzaddik. You're not going to get your lifeline from Mesillas Yesharim if you're still defining yourself as a Rasha, because the person like that is going to say, well, me and Mesillas Yesharim, you think that's going to help me? Mesillas Yesharim helps tzaddikim, like the boys who are learning Keren B'Yavaneh. But for someone like me, what's it going to help me? Mesillas Yesharim is way above where I'm holding now. It's not going to help me. So I need some lifeline. So then suddenly the Yetzer Hara becomes your best friend. Look, anyway, you're a failure when it comes to Avodas Hashem. So you can anyway rule out Gan Eden. So at least enjoy yourself. At least what? You want to suffer in both worlds? You're anyway going to suffer in the next world. That's given. Let's not even talk about that. But in this world, what, you're going to cause yourself torture and pain and feelings of regret and Rikshay Hashem? Why would you do that? At least in this world, at least have fun. At least enjoy yourself. You need to feel worth. If you don't feel worth by being a tzaddik, then you'll feel worth by being a Russian. And then he'll offer you more things. As the Gemara says in Sukkah, Yitzro she'adam mitgaber alav b'chol yom. Meaning, once you give an opening, once you've said, yeah, I'm anyway worthless, then he says, oh, there's who to work on here. Hey, then he's opened the door for us. He's opened the door. Kol yom. He'll pound you every day. Does that mean you're stuck to that? No, Hashem gives enthusiasm and encouragement. V'atatim sholbo. You can control him. You don't have to let him in and continue his process. If you identify yourself as having a tzelem elokim, if you realize that you're still a tzaddik, if you don't identify your sense of self, your identity with the wicked, but you say, that's something to learn from, and you laugh it off. Not that you laugh it off ignoring it. You're growing from it. You're saying, that's something I can learn from. I know my next point that I need to improve. You can control him, because you're identifying with a tzelem elokim. As the Gemara continues and says there in Sukkah, Ve'il malei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro, if Hashem wouldn't be helping you, Einu Yecholo, you wouldn't be able to control him without Hashem. But once you identify with Hashem, you recognize yourself to be a tzaddik, you have the power to overcome. I saw an amazing Rabbeinu Yonah Pirkei Avos, quoted by Rabbi Hoffman, who was a big Baal Nefesh in this last generation. He used to work as an informal mashgiach advisor for many mashgichim and different yeshivas. And he used to have a vad in his house where all different big mechanchim would come to him and they would bring up different issues and discussions that they had in their yeshivas. And then he was like kind of a grand mashgiach, and he would give guidance on all these matters. So there was once a particular yeshiva where someone in the yeshiva, who was in Shana Bet at the time, or Shana Gimel, did something which is forbidden according to Torah in an extreme way. probably according to the law as well. And this person told his Rebbeim what he did, and he felt bad about it, but he wasn't sure now what to do with it. And it was something which is, you know, one of those things that Torah doesn't speak pleasantly about. And they had no idea. Like, this was a level of sin that they hadn't really encountered before. So they took it to the Rav Hoffman, the Grand Mashgiach, to ask this question. And he said, how old is he? So they said, he's 19 and a half. He's past 19, he's not yet 20, he's 19 and a half. So he said, and is he doing okay in yeshiva? Is he learning? He said, yeah, he's learning. He said, oh, it's fine, he'll be okay. Then, Rebbe, maybe you didn't hear clearly what we said that he did. Like, there's no going back from this point. This is passing the red line. This is signed and sealed in the book of death. This is it. And he goes, but you said he's 19 and a half. He said, yes. He said, it's a Rabbeinu Yonah. And they said, which Rabbeinu Yonah? This one. Rabbeinu Yonah. Uvatov ha'olam nidon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges the world favorably. Listen to these words. This is amazing. This is Rabbeinu Yonah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu eino dan et ha'adam lefi ma'asav levad. Ach b'tuvo uv'midot ha'chesed. Hashem doesn't judge the person according to his deeds. HaKadosh Baruch Hu leans towards goodness. Hashem loves us. He cares for us. He's on our side. Hashem's on our side. I can't say that enough. Hashem's on our side. Hashem is on our side. V'zehu shamar David HaMelech alav shalom. Let's be medayik here. This is a pasuk in Tehillim, Perek Kafe. Chatot nu'urai ufashai al tiskor. That's a bit funny, the grammar, because he says, the sins of my youth and my wanton sins, don't remember. Like, why does it say the word nu'urai in the middle there? Right? He should say, the sins that I did b'shogeg and the sins that I did b'mezid of my youth, don't remember. That would be a good sentence. But to say, the sins that I did by mistake in my youth and the sins I did intentionally, don't remember Hashem. Why is that? You hear that? Why is there no right there in the middle? So says Rabbeinu Yonah. Tiyukin Sefer Tehillim. Chatat hein bein ashkagot ubein asdonot. A chatat is defined as something which was done by a person, whether by mistake or whether intentionally, Shadam Moseh ben Urav, that a person does when he's a teenager. What Rabbeinu Yonah here is saying is that even if a person does something intentionally, wantingly, when they're a teenager, it's in Hashem's book, it's considered a mistake. In Hashem's book, it's not considered intentional. Now we're talking about someone here who knows what he was doing, he intended to do it, he didn't care, Peshaim, and he went wantingly and went and did an Avera. But he was a teenager. So according to the Torah, according to Tehillim, Rabbeinu Yonah is explaining, that's considered nothing. Not nothing. You have to bring korban chatat. It's considered a shogeg. Why? Ba'od yitzro tokvo. Because that age, he has a very strong Eitzahara. Until age 20, a person has a very strong Eitzahara. And it's overwhelming. For dato nikle, and his mind isn't so well formed yet. Until age 20, it's not a fair battle. Until age 20, a person's yetzer is so strong and his mind is not yet so well formed that it's not even considered his fault. Even if he did it intentionally and wantingly, and it's not considered his fault. He didn't have the tools yet to deal with it. Okay, then he goes on and says, if a person's already older, then he knew what he was doing and there he's considered accountable. Now, where does it say here an age? So Rabbeinu doesn't say an age, but go one source down, the Radak. The Radak on this pasuk says, Chatat nu'urayu fashayal tizkor perush, when someone is a teenager, then even if it's intentional, they're only called a chet. It's only called a mishogeg. It's called a mistake. Shelosh lema data adam, because a person's mind isn't yet fully formed. For ein sham pesha, and therefore objectively, it's not called pesha. It's not called intentional. Ki a pesha hu a merit. That's only when a person does something knowingly and intentionally. So he says, yeah, but I did it by merit. I did it intentionally. Go, no, you didn't. Kashiya Adam mezid before yamim mi esrim shana v'mala. That's only considered that a person can even do something by mezid once he reaches age 20. So you see here an amazing insight. Rav Hoffman was saying that based on this Rabbeinu Yonah, there is no room for anyone to define themselves as ruled off when they're a teenager. They know what they're doing. They're doing it wantingly, intentionally. But the Yetzer is so strong at that stage that even if they say they want to do it, it's only because of the age they're at. Mashallah Mahadavadome. If you have a very young kid in kindergarten and someone just threw sand in his face, and then he goes and hits back. Even if he says, I'm going to hit him, and then he goes and hits back, you say, he's a kid. Okay, like he said he's doing it intentionally, but he's 3 years old and someone's upset him. So, okay, it's like he's a kid. He doesn't really know what he's doing. It's the same thing until he's 20. And therefore, if a person says, I'm beyond hope, me, there's no hope for me, someone like me, I'm not. Well, you're not 20 yet? The truth is, even if you are 20, there's hope for me. But just to give us what to hold on to. What to hold on to. It's not even considered amazing until age 20. There's an amazing story that I want to share. It was after World War II. And the two of the great Talmud Chachamim who survived the war were the Belzarev and the Imre Emes. And they went through the war, each of them losing their families and losing the whole Chassidus. And each of them had to start the entire Chassidus pretty much from scratch with a few families who survived and starting from the beginning. And they met in Eretz Yisrael, and this was a big meeting. And this was two Gedoyle Oilam who lost everything in the war, their families and their Chassidus, who now are starting from scratch and they can make it to Eretz Yisrael and they're meeting. Everyone wanted to hear what they're going to say. Everyone wanted to hear this. What do they have to say? What's their words going to be? They sat together. They were quiet for a very long time. And everyone in the room was getting quite awkward and uncomfortable. They're just sitting and sitting and sitting. They started crying. But they weren't talking. Just sitting there, two Gedoyei Olam, contemplating everything they've been through, contemplating their families, contemplating their Chassidus, contemplating the Chorban. And eventually, the Imre Emes, he spoke. And he said, this isn't the first meeting. There was a meeting that took place before. There was a meeting once, which also had a crime. That was the meeting of Yosef and Binyamin. When Yosef and Binyamin met after a long time, after sort of a Chorban, of them being apart, they also cried. So what were they crying about? So Rashi says, this is all the Imre Emes speaking. So Rashi says that Yosef was crying about the Bate Migdash, Al Tzavarav in plural. And Binyamin was crying about Shiloh, which was in the portion of, which is going to be destroyed. They're crying for the future, what they see is going to be destroyed. So the Imre Emes said, why were they crying about their brother's loss? Why didn't they cry about their own loss? Why didn't Binyamin cry about the Chorban of the Beis HaMikdash? Why didn't Yosef cry about the Chorban of Shiloh? So the Imre Emes then girded his loins and he said, from here you see that when your friend is going through suffering, when your brother is going through suffering, for him you cry. For him you daven. For him you feel the pain. When you're going through suffering, you don't get stuck. You don't cry. Some people say you can't express your emotion, but you don't get stuck. All you do is build. You focus on building. Yosef, in respect to himself, was building. Binyamin, in respect to himself, was building. You see what someone else is going through? You cry for them. It's not your place to build. You just feel their pain. But where it's your place, you just continue building. There was once a message that came from Shamayim that you can do tshuva. And it wasn't taken. In the Gemara in Chagiga, a bas kol came out and said, Shuvu banim shovavim. This isn't on the page. Shuvu banim shovavim chutz mi acher. Everyone can do tshuva except for acher. And the Maharal, sorry, the Maharsha, Chidush HaGadus, Chagiga Daf Tet Vav Amud Aleph, he says, what was the point of a bas kol coming out saying, you're a loser, you can't do tshuva? What was the purpose of that bas kol? Acher, here is a bas kol coming out of Shamayim saying, everyone can do tshuva except for you. What was the purpose of the bas kol? A bas kol doesn't come for no reason, it comes for a reason. Says the Maharsha, that was another chance. He was being given another chance. Hayalo, lo hayalo lashkiach bekach. His test was not to listen to it. His test was to say, you've gone so far, what's going to be? And he was supposed to turn back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, no, Hashem, let me in, let me back. Just like Adam HaRishon was supposed to. Just like Cain was supposed to. HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls out to us with a bus call. And he says to us, The first part, Shuvu banim shalavim. Banim, banim, you're still my son. I still love you. I still care for you. No matter how far you've gone, the Yetzirah now is pressuring you into a trick. The Yetzirah now is trying to make you feel you don't have any worth. But I'm telling you, Hashem, I'm telling you, I still love you. And we're still connected. And if you have that belief, not that you have to do even tshuva yet, just that you believe in tshuva, just that you believe in the concept of tshuva, if you have that belief, you'll have the wherewithal to hold strong against the Yetzirah. So we spoke about two times ago to be a tzaddik and not get into the situation. We talk about the last two times to be a tzaddik, that when you're in the situation to hold strong. And today we learned that when a snake bites, the poison doesn't kill immediately. But when the person moves around and allows the poison to spread throughout his body, that's where he gets killed. So here we learned that when the Yetzer Hara attacks and a person does an initial sin, that's not a problem. That's not the issue. That's not at all the issue. You can do tshuva on that quickly and you're finished. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, like the Sforno said, you can do tshuva and you finish, move on. Im tetiv seit. If you do tshuva, you can recognize it, you can rise up to a high level. Don't identify yourself as a Rosha, says the Rambam and Rabbeinu Yonah. Recognize this as a new opportunity to grow. Now you know where you need to grow. Like the belt of the engineer, of the car engineer. You know where to go to now. You recognize that, you won't fall. Don't see yourself as a Rosha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calling to you and saying, I love you. You have a chance to come back. The poison then won't spread throughout the body. The security guard won't then give up the code. You'll remain strong. So you define yourself as a tzaddik before the sin. You define yourself as a tzaddik as the sin is about to take place. And you also define yourself as a tzaddik after the sin takes place, because you're looking forward. You're saying, I'm a tzaddik and I'm moving forward. I'm a tzaddik and I'm building. I'm a tzaddik and I have the inner strength to overcome this, to learn from this, and to remain on the path of Hashem.